How much power do state and tribal governments have to block federally approved energy projects if they think it puts water at risk? The Biden administration proposed regulations that would give decision-making power back to state officials and tribal authorities. If passed, the proposal would undo regulations made by the Trump administration that restricted those powers. It's all part of the Clean Water Act passed 50 years ago. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think state and tribal governments should have the authority to block federally approved pipelines and other energy infrastructure? Why or why not? Who should be in charge of letting these things happen? What questions do you have about how all of this works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Steph Tighe is a law professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, researching environmental and health sciences and administrative law. Steph, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, it gets a little complicated when you get federal government, state and tribal and environmental regulation. So I kind of want to take it back to the beginning. What is the authority that was part of this Clean Air Act back in the early 1970s that's getting this back and forth treatment from the two administrations here?
Yeah, so the Clean Water Act allows for the, or requires the EPA to permit a number of different things, right? So if you're going to discharge point source pollutants, that is from a single pipe or something, into navigable waters, then you need a permit from the federal government. If you're going to do wet and filled wetlands kind of dredges, then you also need a permit from the federal government. And 401 is the permit section that allows for states.
And we've lost our guest there. We'll get back into this, maybe with a different connection, looking at the Clean Water Act. And as we were just about to hear, how it regulates approval of different kinds of energy infrastructure. That includes pipelines, an issue here in Wisconsin, of course. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have questions or thoughts on this, 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. This is a proposed rule change from the Biden administration, overturning a Trump administration rule change that changed the way this has worked since the passage of the Clean Air Act in the early 1970s. Coming up in just a bit, we'll be looking at the global economy and a prediction, a concern from the World Bank that we could be at risk of stagflation, a combination of inflation with slow growth, something we haven't really seen since the 1970s. Right now, talking to Steph Tighe, law professor at the UW-Madison, researching environmental health sciences, researching environmental and health sciences and administrative law, looking at this proposed rule change from the Biden administration. We'll get back to this conversation in just a minute. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Steph Tighe, law professor at UW-Madison, talking about a new proposal that, if approved, would give tribes and state officials more authority, restoring that authority to block certain energy projects that could impact water sources, including pipeline projects. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have thoughts on this. If you're wondering how it works, if you're wondering, what it might mean for Wisconsin? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Steph, before we lost you there, you were just about to get to the heart of this, talking about the 401 authority and the Clean Water Act. That's the central issue here we're talking about.
Yeah, sorry about the internet issues.
That's live radio. It happens.
Right. So the 401 authority is basically allowing for states and tribes to have input into the various other type permits that the EPA or Army Corps of Engineers issues, which is basically point source pollutant discharge permits and also wetlands dredge and fill permits.
How has that authority been used over the years until it changed, at least briefly, in the Trump administration?
Yeah, so what happens is that because these different types of permits have effects on state water quality and tribal water quality, the idea was under 401 to allow states and tribes to sort of demonstrate that kind of impact and evaluate whether or not that additional kind of discharge is going to affect the water quality standards. And so prior to the Trump administration, there was a sort of more ambiguous kind of thing, basically allowing states and tribes to have a reasonable timeline to certify whether or not it would have a negative impact on state or tribal water quality, and allowing them to sort of provide either vetoes or conditions on particular types of discharges. The Trump administration found this to be an abuse of the system. There was, like, for example, Washington denied certification for a proposed coal export terminal in 2017. New York denied certification for a natural gas pipeline in 2018. And so this was seen as, by the Trump administration, as an abuse of the system. And so they created this rule, basically one saying, hey, states and tribes only have a certain amount of time to object to these things. And the outer bound is 1 year. And they drew this from a DC circuit opinion. And then two, that kind of certification decision, whether or not this discharge is certified or not certified, has to be based on specific discharges from a proposed activity, not the whole overall water quality effects, and also restricts the kind of conditions that the states and tribes may impose. So it's not just about whether or not something is approved, not approved, approved, but rather also these additional conditions that are applied. So they limited that, and they also put some restrictions on how long they have to make a decision on whether or not some kind of permit application is approved.
Back in 2020, then EPA Director Andrew Wheeler said that the move was aiming to, I'm going to quote here, curb abuses of the Clean Water Act that have held our nation's energy infrastructure projects hostage and to put in place clear guidelines that finally give these projects a path forward, end quote. Was there a sense that this was, an arbitrary barrier to developing energy infrastructure?
Well, I think there was a sense from the Trump administration that it was. As I mentioned, there were a number of states that had objected to various types of proposed discharges on the basis that this would harm the water quality standards. But I think these same states and also tribes would say that, no, this is necessary to protect water quality standards. And one thing that I would mention is that the issue of water quality standards is that when states and tribes evaluate whether or not proposed use will hinder water quality standards, they have to take into account a number of other types of water uses. So far, I mentioned dredge and fill permits and point source discharge permits. That's like, say, from a company or something or a pipeline to a particular water. But there's a lot of other things that states and tribes manage in a traditional way. For example, non-point source discharge permits or non-point source discharge in general, which is not in a permit system under the Clean Water Act, but is a large source of water pollution. For example, agricultural runoff, runoff from transportation structures, like, you know, just runoff from highways. All of these things are things that states and tribes consider when considering whether or not a potential point source discharge or wetlands fill will it affects the whole overall water quality standard.
How, under this system, can states and tribal governments take into account risk? And I'm thinking here of a pipeline where if it works normally, there should be little or no discharge and pollution. But in the risk of a spill of some sort, there can suddenly be a lot. How does that factor into these decisions? How much are states and tribal governments allowed to take that risk into account?
I think that under both the Trump and Biden approach, they would be able to take into account risk. The difference between the Trump and Biden approach is that the Trump risk can only be about that potential pipeline discharge or whatever, and how that individual pipeline discharge might affect the waters. Whereas under the Biden approach and the previous approach, states and tribes can consider also the existing amount of pollution that's in the water as a result of those non-point source discharges that I mentioned, right? The cumulative effects of that discharge in addition to runoff from farmlands, runoff from highways, et cetera.
Talking to Steph Tai, law professor at UW-Madison, who researches, among other things, environmental law, looking at this rule change proposed by the Biden administration. We'll get into the process of it just a bit. It would flip back from a Trump administration change under the Clean Water Act, giving ultimately states more authority if this Biden administration rule goes through to block or put conditions on certain kinds of energy projects to take pollution and risks to water quality into effect. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about how this works? How much do states and tribal governments, do you think, have the right, or should they have the right, to stop these kind of projects or put conditions? Or if it's federally approved, should it just go ahead? Do you have concerns about the impact on energy production and flow thereof? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Steph, Wisconsin has, and neighboring states as well, have pipeline projects that are controversial. They're in the courts often. Does this rule we're talking about have much to do with what we're arguing about here in Wisconsin?
I mean, it can, in the sense that it allows for more opportunities for states and tribal governments to sort of object to particular types of uses of water. So to that extent, it does. To the extent that it affects the approval, other types of approval for, say, pipelines and stuff, somewhat, but not entirely. That is, approvals for pipelines and things are supposed to be based on an overall analysis of the environmental impacts, but also other types of legal matters, and this will affect that overall evaluation.
Now, the thing about pipelines is, of course, they're long. They go across jurisdictions from state to state and across tribal boundaries, as we know here in Wisconsin. Is part of the Trump administration rule change that would be overturned under this proposal, is part of the goal here to say we can't just let one jurisdiction block something for everybody?
Yeah, I mean, one interesting thing about this proposal is that the Biden proposal is that not only does it allow for sort of expanded, or not expanded, because it's basically going back to the Obama administration approach, this more comprehensive consideration by states and tribes, but it also allows for inputs from neighboring jurisdictions, which means that it sort of looks at the sort of overall structure of the project versus an individual kind of stakeholder participation in the project.
Now, this is a proposed rule change. It's something that doesn't go through Congress. The administration puts it out there. Can you talk us through the process and the comment period and things like that that have to happen between now and this taking effect?
Yeah, so when a proposed rule is issued in the Federal Register, there's a certain number of days for comment. It's usually 60 days, although I don't remember the amount of days like available for this. But what happens is that various stakeholders, including members of the public, but including pipelines, including tribes, everyone can submit public comments. And that's something that everyone listening to here can do. And the comment process is not like, say, commenting on a newspaper article. It actually has some legal validity in the sense that if you're commenting, agencies have to take into account the substance of that comment, not necessarily each individual comment, but they have to address that in their final rule. And if they don't address that adequately, that can be overturned by a court. They need to at least take a non-arbitrary and capricious approach to all the submitted comments.
What do they end up doing with those comments? I'm guessing, is there a prospect that negative comments would lead the Biden administration to say, no, we're not going to do this after all?
Well, it might lead them to not do it after all, but it might lead them to limit what they're doing or to curtail what they're doing. I mean, this happened in the Trump kind of proposal, too. There was a period for public comments, which is required under the Administrative Procedure Act, and they didn't really narrow their approach that much, but they did address all the substance of the comments, saying, oh, we don't think this matters because X, Y, Z. That said, that's what led to their rule being stayed by a Northern California District Court, which in turn ended up also being that ended up being rejected by the Supreme Court. There's a lot of stuff about that, but the sum of it is that what that means is that agencies at least need to address those kind of comments, and that will be taken into consideration by courts in any kind of legal challenge.
And speaking of courts, now under the rule that we would go back to under the Biden administration, if this goes ahead, say I'm a pipeline company and I've gotten my federal approval. And then a state or tribal government says, no, we're looking at it under our standards. it's back off the table, or we're going to impose these conditions on you. Do I have a recourse? Is there a court? Can I go into court and say, no, state, your regulations are too difficult? They're unreasonable?
Well, I think first they would need to challenge. If this rule comes into place, they would need to challenge that rule in the first place as arbitrary and capricious. And so they would first need to get that rule rejected so that the whole process that the EPA has now designed is rejected. Then if that rule doesn't get rejected, they can still challenge in a more limited basis that determination by the tribe that this kind of violates water quality standards. That's a more subsequent kind of evaluation.
In just our last couple minutes, bigger picture, we see administrations on a lot of environmental issues doing a back and forth. A Republican changes a thing, a Democrat changes a back, a Republican, and so on. How much of that have you seen in the transition from the Trump administration to the Biden administration?
It's been absolutely a lot. And I've noticed that in a number of different roles. One thing I wanted to point out is that the Biden administration actually did encapsulate one of the Trump administration's things, sort of. So one of the things that the Trump administration did with this 401 rule is that they said, okay, we're going to have a maximum time limit for states and tribes to decide on the water quality certification process of up to 1 year. And the Biden administration actually kind of took that. What they said, and I thought this was really interesting, and I think this is what they're basing their economic value of this rule on, is that they said, okay, we're going to do two things. We're going to say, look, we're going to have states and tribes consult with the EPA and decide negotiatively on what time and time frame it's necessary to evaluate this kind of proposal, which suggests that it can go before a year or it can be up over a year, which is different from the Trump administration because they had a maximum of 1 year. And this means that if the states and the EPA decide that it's too complicated and it's going to take over a year to do that, they can do it. But it also says that if the EPA and the state or tribe doesn't agree on the time frame, then the default is going to be 60 days, which is a much more limited process. And so what happens is it seems to and then the state or tribe would have to apply for extension with a written kind of process. So what it seems to do is it seems to speed up some kind of areas for permit applications and then maybe slow down other areas. And so it's a really interesting kind of approach. We'll see how the administration applies that. But I think it's not entirely different from the Trump administration's approach.
Now, this is all basically executive action, rulemaking authority granted, in this case, under the Clean Water Act by Congress. Have we seen Congress dig back into some of these early 70s environmental regulations and clarify or change things or limit or expand this kind of authority for the executive branch?
Alas, they have not. I mean, there's been even calls from the Supreme Court to sort of expand that, for example, with the actual reach of the Clean Water Act, which is one of the issues before the Supreme Court this next fall. But it hasn't been something that Congress has addressed. I know that the Obama administration initially said that they were going to push for addressing, say, the overall jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act and various other elements with it, and they didn't really go very far on this.
What are some of the other big environmental stories that you are watching for between Congress, the president, and, of course, the courts, the Supreme Court weighing in on some of these issues?
Yeah, I think the thing that I mentioned just now is going to be before the court. The briefing was over the summer, and I have to disclose that I was part of an amicus group representing water scientists in favor of the Biden administration. But the main thing is that there's a case before the Supreme Court about the reach of the Clean Water Act in terms of what wetlands kind of permits are allowable under the Clean Water Act. Is it wetlands that just directly touch surface waters, that wetlands that are connected in some kind of more seasonal way, all of that stuff. So that's something that's going to be a big determination, and it's going to carve out either carve out a bunch of wetlands from the scope of the Clean Water Act, still allowing them to be permitted through state systems, or it's going to sort of limit the reach of the Clean Water Act.
And how how big an impact could that have if that, I think they're sometimes called intermittent waters, if those protections, if the court rules, they don't apply?
Yeah, so the scientists that I that my team represents is that it will actually affect, like, compared to the Obama/Biden approach, the Trump approach would limit it by a fairly significant amount. I think like 30 or 40% would reduce it, the coverage of the Clean Water Act.
Steph, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
All right, thank you.
That's Steph Tighe, law professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, researching environmental and health sciences and administrative law. Been talking about the impact of a recently announced proposal by the Biden administration that would give some authority back to state and tribal governments when making decisions about blocking pipelines, among other energy-related projects that require federal approval.